Hi, this is Alan Carrington again. To be honest with you, I think I'm at one of the happiest places to be in my career so far in e-learning. I'm sitting here with Linda Westfarland from the School of Education. Linda and I are kind of proud as punch to be recipients of the 2012 OLT, that's Office of Learning and Teaching, National Citation for Contributions to Student Learning. This is a national award, and well, to be honest with you, I think Linda is pretty well excited as I am. Linda?
Oh, I'd say so, yes, yeah. Probably more so, actually.
I don't know. It's really quite interesting. There's 152 of these things being issued by the Australian government to 38 universities, and University of Adelaide put forward two, and we got two, and we're it. I want to read Linda's because it's really important to understand what it's all about. Linda's reads, for vibrant and compassionate approaches to teaching and learning, which inspire students' enthusiasm and passion for the profession of teaching. Linda, mine's about technology, but maybe there's an overlap.
Oh, there's definitely an overlap. The words are shared between the two citations, which is just lovely. And yours reads, a sustained commitment to inspiring, challenging and mentoring academics to teach with activity-centred pedagogies and the latest learning technologies to enrich the student experience. So if I'm one bookend, you're the other.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
we're two sides of the same coin, I reckon.
Yeah, and it's going to open some amazing doors for us for some of the possibilities that we've been talking about for years. One of the things that I like so much about this citation is, first of all, it provides a credibility to what we've been doing here at the University of Adelaide for the last 8-9 years. But it also does something to teaching at university, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. I think teaching is sometimes at university, it's like the elephant in the room. It's the thing that you do but that you don't talk about. I think it's improving, and that's great. We've now got awards that happen in the faculties. We've got awards that happen across the university. But to be recognised nationally does put teaching more on the map than I think it's probably ever been. And that's a good thing because it's core business for educators at universities. What we do, it's part of the job. And to have it recognised, I think, at a national level really does reinforce how important it is for us to do best practice with our students and not just stand in front of a lecture theatre and talk.
Yeah, the thing that come across in both our citations, and because we know each other so well, it's pretty evident in everything we do together, but the truth is it's all about the passion for teaching.
I totally, totally agree.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about this thing, passion, for a while. Do you think it is the difference it's not about good and bad teaching, it's about good and excellent teaching. Does passion, what makes an excellent teacher?
Passion's got to be part of the mix, is what I think. If you don't have passion for a subject area or for your students or for the process of the teaching itself, then you're not going to be a good teacher. Now, the question is, can it be learned? I don't know. Actually, maybe people could get back to us on that one, but I don't know that you can teach passion. I think without passion, you can be an adequate teacher. With passion, you cross the line from being adequate into being good, very good, because what you love feeds into what you do, and I think that shows with your teaching. If you love what you're doing, if you love what your students, who they are as people, that you enjoy the process of the teaching practice that happens, then that passion shines through and students know, because they can pick a fraud at 100 paces. They know who's not there in their heart. You might be there in your head, but you're not there in your heart. And that's the critical thing with teaching, is it needs to be, I think, come from the heart.
Well, I think you can teach it too. I think we're facing a situation here Look, maybe there's been, you know, we're on the shoulders of giants, but the question is, what can we do to put together professional development for teaching, for teachers, that can actually help them to become more passionate? Now, it's not just knowledge of content. You talk about in your citation or in your application, which we're going to put both the applications for download for people to have a look at. There's teachable moments, particularly in yours, okay? I've got to say that because I read yours and it was a professional development experience, okay? Honestly, it was. Seriously.
Thank
but you talk about things like a chain of care. Yeah. What in the world is a chain of care?
It's from the feminist philosopher Nell Noddings, who I think is a bit of an unsung hero in education. A chain of care is established when you bring to your students a sense of care for them. So, yes, it's about the subject and the knowledge, and it's about the pedagogy, and, yes, it's about assessment, but you've got to care about your students. And so I think the rhetoric of the student experience is really, really important, and having that student-centred orientation I absolutely welcome, but I think it actually has to be backed up with something from the heart. So when Nell Noddings talks about a chain of care, for example, this is how she hypothesises that societies that function well should function, and that is because people care about each other. So when a teacher goes into a classroom and they care for their students, that care it sort of extends from the students to the family, to the home life of that student. So the chain of care starts to think, it seems one-on-one, but it ends up being more community-based. So school ends up having a focal point of care that extends across the whole of the structure of the school and all the students in it.
Yeah, okay. Now, I can visualise and understand when the chain of care begins, because when the student walks into the room or comes into your role as a teacher to the student, when does the chain of care finish?
It doesn't. It doesn't.
Is this practical? I mean, is it really practical?
Practical or not, I don't think it does end. I don't think it should end. The care has to continue and I think extend beyond the human being into the environment, into society, into the kind of intangible things that make us human beings that function on a kind of on a level of peace and understanding. If you don't have a chain of care, then you end up with people who are robots. You end up with people who put money before compassion, and I don't think you can do that effectively and have a caring, just society. I think you end up with anarchy on one hand, or you end up with, you know, sort of George Orwellian nightmares on the other.
Yeah, okay. Part of my world, and when we cross over, my world is to do with technology and empowerment and improving the teachers' efficiencies, improving the teachers' effectiveness in bringing about learning outcomes. Always we meet with this, I haven't got time. And if they haven't got time to change, they haven't got time to really care.
Yeah, well, I think that your world can have a little bit of input into that. There is absolutely no reason why you can't show your care via an email. And all you've got to do is ask a question. Are you okay? Do you need some help? You don't have to have that person sitting in the seat in front of you. It helps sometimes because you'd like to hold a hand or give a student a hug if they're really upset or they're in trouble somehow. You want to help. But if that student's not there, you can extend the chain of care by putting out the email, by asking, by phoning. I mean, people forget phoning is a technology. The telephone is a technology. You can ring a student and say, look, I've heard that you've had a tragedy in your family and I'm really sorry to hear that, and if there's anything I can do to make the road a little easier in the next couple of months, then just give me an email and I'll do my best to help you out.
How do we balance this with stuff like research? And, you know, as a higher education teacher, really got time for this?
Well, whether they do or don't, I guess it's the workload problem of most universities is going to be. I'm responsible for about 200 plus students, and I'd find time to care. I don't know that the research happens as a result, and it probably falls off the edge of the plate a bit. But having said that, there's no reason why the care can't become the research, because if your passion extends beyond the human being to the more intangible, then you're caring for something called education. You're caring for the subject area that you love.
And how to do it better.
And how to do it better, and how to bring that care that you love and that you foist on your students back into the profession, because research is, by its nature, it's a new contribution to the discipline, to the profession in which you're a part. So if the passion is partly about the love of teaching, the love of the process, the love of the students that have inputs into it, yes, but it's also, this is about me thinking about my best practice and how, I mean, I teach teachers, so how I can model that best practice, because I want them going into a school and treating their students how I would treat them, and that is fundamentally, at a bottom line, with courtesy and respect.
In your citation application, it reads, and there's two mentions to Piaget and Piaget and
Vygotsky.
I must get my Russian right, I think. Argue that people learn by experiencing knowledge at fundamentally emotional and cognitive levels. Mm-hmm. They don't learn because a lecturer prattles.
Yes.
That's a Lindian. Okay. Enthusiasm, care, and passion are essential for all teachers, whether in a university or a school, since this makes the student experience in the lecture theatre and in the
cranium
enjoyable and satisfying. Yeah. Student experience is considered an imperative in universities these days. Unless university teachers care, this imperative is nothing more than fluffy rhetoric. More importantly, this pedagogy ensures that students learn actively and retain knowledge.
Yes.
Now, you said it, I believe it.
What's that mean?
With all every fibre of my body.
Yes.
But here we go. So no matter what we're doing about trying to improve the student experience, mm-hmm. unless we can improve the teacher's caring,
mm-hmm.
we're not going to cut it.
No, we won't. We won't cut it. What I'm saying there is, the at a cognitive level, the brain has to fire in order to learn effectively. So if you go via your Piaget and your Vygotsky, they talk about social environmental, and that knowledge then constructs onto stuff that you already know. So Vygotsky will, for example, talk about things like zones of proximal development, which is the kind of comfort zone of learning. And if it's too close, you're bored, and if it's too far away, it's out of reach and impossible and you don't understand and you're confused and in trouble. So what you've got to do is teach within that zone of proximal development. But it seems to me that if you go too close, you get bored. If you go too far away, you get bored as well because it's beyond the student. And so what you've got to do is get the zone right. But then it's not enough to do that. You've got to engage the student in a way that keeps them awake, keeps them alive, keeps them functioning at a fun level. Because, it's a no-brainer, no pun intended. A firing, happy, zappy brain with lots of cognitive stuff going on there will learn better than a bored, sleepy, I'd really rather be somewhere else brain. So that means your engagement's critical to learning. You get your level right and then you get the engagement happening. And then the care exudes from that because you've got to care about the learning as much as yourself. It can't just be bells and whistles and fun and frivolity. It's got to have some little core of knowledge, some little nub that you want them to walk away from. It doesn't have to be complicated. But that one thing, it might be more, but the one critical thing you want them to walk away from that lecture with has to be something that they can go, God, I got that. I understood it. Mm. And that's the thing with teaching.
Well, that takes it across into my world because the whole idea of technology empowering the teacher, the whole idea that it can actually improve engagement with the students, and that now we're starting to go somewhere because the students, of course, are totally wired these days. But they're not wired for learning; they're wired for social stuff. Mm-hmm. Okay, but they can direct that into really, really powerful, engaged learning if the teachers know how to manage it.
This is true.
That's the challenge.
This is true, but this is where I'd ask you the question. One of the key words in your citation, which have really sort of pulled in my interest, was the word enrich.
Yes.
Right. Now, it seems to me that the technology is there because it can enrich that learning experience, and that's the thing I want to hold close to my heart and polish.
Yeah.
Can you talk to us more about how ICTs, how information technologies, computers, all of that stuff can play into what teachers do so as to enrich?
You know what? We're up to 15 minutes. I think we're on ready for the next one. Whether we can get that out in the next, day or so, but certainly next week, let's talk about that.
Okay.
I'm talking to Linda Westphalen, and at the risk of unmitigated self-promotion, we've just both of us won National Teaching and Learning Awards, and we're really, really happy about it.
Oh, I will say so. And Alan and I are going to have lunch to celebrate probably a couple of times.
A couple of times. Thanks, Linda.
Oh, you're welcome.